It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running with a brand new month of the horn. Yes, indeed. October begins, well, already began earlier today, at least here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. It probably began yesterday if you're on the other side of the planet, up over, down under, and busy all being Antipodean and all of that. But hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is the first day of October 2018. This is the horn. That's where you go. Head on .live. If you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the hours in which this program is live. Yes, indeed. If you jump in there, you'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Laborman and Larry and Malin and VT Blom. More to wander in later, I'm sure. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space on what must be a lovely Northern California day, cool with a dab of rain, 72 degrees in the man cave, says spacing guild master Sparky, who has folded space to become man cave. Yes. Being the first day of the month, we have thanks to send out to our first day of the month subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Lauren in the far reaches of Alberta. Thank you to Vernon in San Diego. Thank you very kindly indeed to Peter in Texas. Thank you very much to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. Thanks very kindly to our buddy John in North Carolina. Thank you very kindly indeed. Thank you very much to Smitty in Florida. Thanks as well to Kay in California. Thank you, Kay. Thank you very much to Joseph in Washington State. Let me make sure I didn't miss anybody. I did not. So those are, yes, I did. Thank you very kindly to Rusty. Thank you, Rusty. Thank you very kindly indeed. And so those are our first of the month subscribers. If you'd like to join their ranks, and that would be wonderful, you know the drill. Just run over to headon.live and use the PayPal button and make it a recurring payment. It'll happen on this day every month. And gosh, the gift you put forward to keep things on the air here will be something on the order of around a quarter to an eighth of a cup of coffee, depending on the cost of a cup of coffee, depending on where you get your coffee. Mm-hmm. I mean, goodness gracious, if you use those pre-made K-cup coffee pods, well, maybe this program can actually be cheaper than a single cup of that you make at home. By Grapthar's hammer, what a savings. Yes, so that's how that works. Also, thanks very kindly to our friends who who contribute via the Patreon campaign, which happens on the first of the month, and I'll be sharing those names as quick as Patreon is done, you know, processing them. But that's where we stand. It is the first day of the month. That means that Shirley's Memorial Challenge is on the table. And it, you know what? That means that if we can raise $200 this evening, those $200, your $200, will be doubled. They will turn miraculously into $400 if we can raise the $200. So 10 at 20, 20 at 10. 20 new subscribers at $10 a piece would meet Shirley's challenge and would kind of be humongous. But anyway, we can do it. Shirley's challenge is on the table, courtesy of our buddy Laborman, our buddy Ralphs, and one other individual who prefers to remain anonymous. So thank you very kindly to all three for keeping Shirley's challenge going in memory of our buddy Bruce up in Wisconsin. Thank you very much indeed. Again, if we knocked it out, and because I got to tell you, I had it last week was kind of ooky because we were just sort of bathed in the predatory sexual filth that is the American white wing. But the fact of the matter is, it was also nice because for a whole week there was no fundraising. And so, consequently, it just, you know, it changes the tenor of the program when I don't have to do that, when we just get it done and we take care of it. So, if we could knock down the matching challenge for Shirley's challenge this evening, it would be humongous. So, whether it be a new subscription via Patreon or a one-off at PayPal or a new subscription at PayPal, that would be tremendous. Under the subject line, by the way, it's More In Monday. We'll get there in a minute. Oh, okay. Thank you. Note coming in from Sparky. Apparently, we may hear from our buddy John Britovo this evening. That would be awesome. He's always welcome anytime he cares to stop by. Starting out with a note from Ron in Raleigh. Subject line, missed it by that much. Seems your favorite senator, Jeff Rubber Tip Flake. My favorite senator. Oh, Ron's such a kidder. Seems your favorite senator, Jeff Rubber Tipped Arrows Flake. Almost grew a spine last week. He managed, however, to have it both ways. He voted for Brett Kavanaugh on the Judiciary Committee, but said after being cornered in an elevator by some angry women, he wouldn't vote for the nominee in the full Senate without a BS FBI investigation. Does anyone in this community believe that that wuss wouldn't vote for Kavanaugh anyway? This is just a way for him to save face. Dolt 45 said today, after his so-called renegotiation of NAFTA, that it was a privilege for Canada to trade with us. The same could be said of Mexico, China, and Europe. The geezer also said that he and Kim Jong-un are now in love. If that doesn't give you the heebie-jeebies, nothing will. Every damn day, Bob, I can't get any rest from the insanity. P.S. Does this mean that Trump is Mr. Boo-Foo? I've been trying to protect my beautiful mind, copyright Barbara Bush, from just imagining any of those images of Trump and Kim Jong bad golf pants in love pretty much all weekend. It's just, well, and understand, that has nothing to do with sexuality. that has to that is strictly a matter of aesthetics. The idea of that adipose wad of paranoia, that pale, jiggling adipose wad of paranoia engaged in sexual congress. Sexual congress, now. We could probably talk about that for a while. But engaged in sexual congress with anyone or anything is enough to put me off my barbecue for a month of Sundays. So, thanks a boatload, Ron. Thanks for the sour persimmons, brother. Yeah. There was, of course, there was a lot that went on today with him taking questions and there in the Rose Garden. It was it turned into a nasty, disrespectful bit of filth. But who's surprised at that? Yeah. And let's just get this started, shall we? Yeah, because traditions, right?
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's More in Monday on the Horn. Yes, here. Mere steps off the carnival midway. Far, far away, it would seem, from the madding crowd standing around throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls in a vain and hopeless attempt to win a little bitty baby iguana. We've got them all for you. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, we've got every kind of right-wing, white-wing moran that you could possibly imagine. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger-eaters, maggots, libertarians, neo-Nazis, Klansmen, skinheads, rock-ribbed Republicans all here for your amazement on Moran Monday on the Horn. Yes, yes, indeed. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much. That's right, friends and neighbors. For less than a fifth of the cost of a cup of coffee over on the Carnival Midway there, and God knows about a 17th of the cost of a frozen corn dog dipped quickly in boiling oil, you too can be a sustaining subscriber of all that transpires here on the Horn. The usual advisory goes out, friends and neighbors, aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters, kitties and cousins. Yes, indeed, the warning does go out. As you enter the Moran Monday tent, as you slip behind the thin cybernetic veil, keep a close hand on purses, watches, wallets, jewelry, rings, bracelets, necklaces. Children, small animals, yes, even that iguana that you won throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls, and especially European-style messenger bags, because after all, the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. And you will. You will. I gotta tell you, for purposes of my own nominations, today was kind of a toss-up between two people, and I'm still not entirely certain as to who wins pride of place in this. Now, you might have some other ideas, but the two people I saw taking the lead in the Moran Monday nominations this first day of October 2018 are Kellyanne Conway, who has never been grandmothered out, and Kanye West. And frankly, I hesitate to say so, but I think Kanye's got to win. the idea that this guy thinks that we're going to create jobs in America by abolishing the constitutional amendment that abolished chattel slavery is a level of morality that theoretical physicists have only contemplated but never fully identified. It's kind of like the Higgs boson particle, the so-called God particle, or dark matter. You think that they're pretty sure, and then you get, well, that, what Kanye did. There are times, as long as I've been at this, that I find myself still looking at the screen, mouth agape, when I read something so monumentally stupid as to cheat my corporeal existence of the very breath of life itself for on a momentary basis. And Kanye's remarks were surely that. Now he's a huckster and a hustler and a grifter in the mold of Julius Geezer himself. That's probably why they have such a little mutual admiration society going on. But the idea that The idea that it that can even be floated, the repeal of the 13th Amendment, I thought I said Higgs boson. Maybe I didn't say. Maybe I said Higgs. Okay, thank you. The Horn ad hoc corrections department, this time being helmed by Randy and PA, says, small correction, it's not the Higgs boson particle, it's the Higgs boson particle. We regret the error. But, no, I mean, it's painful to contemplate. The 13th Amendment, really? It's breathtaking. And of course, he said from if I got the context correct, it was a tweet that he sent out from his private jet. In which he, I guess, goes about the business of having cheap, overpriced shit made in China by, for all we know, 11-year-old little girls chained to tables. What he said, it's a picture of him in a jet, and it's basically the top of his empty head wearing a made-in-China maggot hat. And his tweet read as follows, and forgive me if I struggle, because you know, dealing with stupidity on a level like this is like swimming in pudding. This represents good. He's talking about his stupid hat. This represents good and America becoming whole again. We will no longer outsource to other countries. Add parenthetically, none of his overpriced shit is made in America. Pretty sure of that. We build factories here in America and create jobs. We will provide jobs for all who are free from prisons as we abolish the 13th Amendment. Message sent with love. Wow, that's stupid. I know I keep using that particular word, and I'm sorry for wearing it out, but uneducated? Ignorant? Ignorance is curable. But this guy continues to prove that he has no interest in taking the cure. Quick note coming in from Tracy. Stay out of my head, Bob. I was hoping you would bring up that idiot. He's an embarrassment and makes Ben Carson look like Mount. Wait a minute. I was about to collapse in laughter. Hold on. I was hoping, because I got to read this without falling apart before I get to the end of it, you'll understand why. Here, let's just award the cowbell before I do fall apart. I was hoping that you would bring up that idiot. He's an embarrassment and makes Ben Carson look like Malcolm X. See, the reason that's funny, that's the beauty of comedy. Some things are funny on multiple levels. And in this case, it's funny because Tracy is pointing out that the multimillionaire known as Yeezy is an idiot, but at the same time, she creates the mental image of Ben Carson as Malcolm X. And then you have to deal with the mental images that come with the picture, the portrait of Jesus standing next to his buddy Ben Carson, with Ben Carson as Malcolm X. It's the beautiful thing about comedy. Agnes and I had to drive down to Charleston yesterday. And because it's West Virginia, wait a minute. It's going to be one of those evenings. Subject line, Tracy. Lee in New York says, "Stop telling Bob which heads to stay out of, Tracy." But because it's West Virginia, it's not at all surprising as we're going down the road. I just spontaneously started quietly giggling. And my lovely wife looked across at me and said, "Oh, what now?" And we had just passed a billboard. And it was what was on the billboard that made me giggle. One of these days, I will own all of the original black and white episodes, and some of the color ones, too, of the Beverly Hillbillies. That was some brilliant comedic writing. Far from making fun of hillbillies, they wound up usually being the smartest people, you know, out there in Beverly Hills. The same goes for the regard that I hold for the madness that was Green Acres. Yeah, I don't think that level of comedic writing exists anymore. But the reason I started laughing, as I explained to Agnes, I said, "Do you remember Dash Riprock on the Beverly Hillbillies?" Well, yeah. I said, "Do you remember what his..." I said, "Dash Riprock was his screen name. Do you remember what his original name was?" And she said, "No." And I said, Homer Noodleman. And she smiled. She said, yeah, that's right, Homer Noodleman. I said, and do you remember how he inspired Jethro to want to become a great heartthrob leading man like Dash Riprock? And she said, yeah. So I then said, well, do you remember what Jethro's screen name was going to be? And she said, no. And I said, Beef Jerky. And that's why I was laughing to begin with, because we had just passed a billboard that said, because it's West Virginia, Beef Jerky Outlet. Free samples. Over 100 different varieties. And because of the miracle that is comedy and the miracle that is memory, I don't like that word. Miracle's not right. But just because of the electronic chemistry that is memory, I got to have a good 5-mile giggle. And laughter really is good for you. I got to have a good 5-mile giggle at 60 miles an hour just because I saw a sign that said Beef Jerky, and I suddenly remembered, and that took me to Dash Riprock, which took me to Homer Noodleman, which took me to Jethro Bodine, which is what originally got started with Beef Jerky. Mm-hmm. Anyway, going back to... So that's why Ben Carson as Malcolm X is so funny, because it's got a loop back on it. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Excuse me? Why in Landry's name would anyone listen to this ignorant Negro? He can't even rap worth a damn. Kanye has faked his way to wealth and fame. As Spike Lee once said of Clarence Slappy Thomas, Kanye is a handkerchief head chicken and biscuit eating Uncle Tom. Oh my God. Woo. And you know, Ron, I can even look, there's gonna be, I know. James in Illinois, WTF. What the fuck is a Yeezy? I think that I don't really need to know, but what the fuck? Oh, you're going to hell, Asa. Brother Deacon Asa, if you introduce the millions of children to the proof to the pool of labor, wouldn't that mean more people are competing for the same jobs, Kanye? Fuckwad. Well, yeah, and see, the thing is, as maybe we'll have to dabble into that, but then, no, here's the going to hell part from Brother Deacon Asa. So, have you heard the one where a Higgs boson walks into a Catholic church and the priest tells him his kind is not welcome in the church? To which the Higgs boson replies, but Father... Without me, there would be no mass. No mass. yeah, that's a high quality shaggy dog. There is what that is. Meanwhile, Hung Like Jesus says the Flintstones had some classic knockoff names too. Oh yes, they did. Stony Curtis comes to mind. But they didn't have no double knot spies. But to loop back to this original Moran Monday nominee for a moment or two, we will provide jobs. No, Julius Geezer keeps bragging that everybody made the lowest unemployment in the history of unemployment lowestness. Fuck. But, you know, it's true. I mean, unemployment is down to the... We're down at that number that the pointy-headed economists consider to be full employment. That means if you want to put any more people in any more jobs, you're going to need more people. But then again, Geezer Disgustus doesn't want any more people unless they're coming from Norway. And I don't see just a whole bunch of Norwegians busting ass to get over here so they can give up the health care that they've got and the decent retirement that they've got and the social safety net that they've got and the pleasant living circumstances that they've got so that they can be uninsured and work for 20 hours a week for minimum fucking wage on shitty-ass jobs. In which case, if they should happen to need, say, Medicaid or SNAP benefits, you know, food to eat, because they're working shitty American minimum wage jobs, well, then according to the Trump administration, they probably couldn't get a green card and would be rousted out of here for using the system. So I don't know who's going to work in those factories that Yeezy is going to build here in Merca and create jobs. We will provide jobs for all who are free from prisons. Oh, yes, I do. Bill in Allentown wants to know, do you remember that Jethro wanted to be a big-time movie producer? I do, because see, Uncle Jed bought a studio. He may have bought the studio where Dash Riprock was the lead attraction. But Jethro went over there and his with his ascot and his jacket and his glasses and his beret, and he came back and said, I was just over there to the Brando set, Uncle Jed, and you know what they got over there? Motivation. They're just swimming in it. That's what we need, motivation, Uncle Jed. They're just swimming in it. Brilliant. Simply brilliant. We will provide jobs for all who are free from prisons. Wait, what have I done? I can't believe, says Ron and Raleigh, you let the Star Trek reference go right past you. Yeah, I know, Landrews. As far as manufacturing coming back to the U.S., it ain't going to happen if the prison industrial complex can pay prisoners 22 cents an hour and stuff the massive profits in their overflowing pockets. Yeah, I got it. I got it sort of. It was slow arriving, but I got it. So we have reached our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. But let's take a quick look at the actual text of the 13th Amendment. Because this is... kind of important. The 13th Amendment was passed on January 31st. Where did I get the 35th? I was looking at the 5 and 65. That's where. On January 31st, 1865, 98 years before my birth to the day, and it and the 14th Amendment are generally referred to as the Civil War Amendments. Section 1, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Section 2. Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. You would think it somewhat self-explanatory, wouldn't you? Yes. Thank you. Thank you for that background, Brother Deacon Asa. Kanye West, rapper, changes his name to Ye. Y-E. He wrote on Twitter, the being formerly, not formerly, because he's about as literate as his buddy Trump, the being formerly known as Kanye West, I am Ye. Y-E. For those of us who practice the art of word knowing, this presents a bit of a conundrum. Because, in fact, as Mark Twain pointed out brilliantly, Y-E, which is often pronounced Ye by people who don't know better, in Elizabethan English is actually pronounced thee. That Y was a hard T-H. V. Thus, when you see Y-E, oldie, general store, tavern, body house, the Y-E is not ye as in your, it's Y-E the as in the, T-H-E. So apparently Kanye West, super genius, has named himself a definite article. And the funny thing is, I imagine he thinks, well, you know, at least it's pronounceable, unlike that hieroglyph that Prince named himself. But it's not, because most people will think it's Ye, and he's actually named himself The. Just The what? Just The. What's your name? The. Hi, well, pleased to meet you. I'm Anne. You sure about that? No, I'm indefinite. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Anyone who has seen the movie Lincoln knows that there was that the 13th Amendment was passed by Congress before the Civil War actually ended, and there was considerable debate over whether or not to do that. But Lincoln understood that if you tried to pass the 13th Amendment after the Civil War had ended, and after the states in rebellion had been readmitted to the Union, it wouldn't happen. Now, granted, the Emancipation Proclamation had taken effect in the states participating in the rebellion, but enforcement there was a problem. This was a constitutional answer to the national original sin. And no one, upon conviction of a crime in this country, is declared to be enslaved. They can, however, be set to involuntary servitude. And even that, it does not play well in the modern era. Witness the 22 cents an hour that Ron and Raleigh references. Ron notes, wouldn't it be, I'm thinking he wants to pronounce it like the last two letters in Kanye. Yay. Well, good for him. Welcome to English. Lee in New York says, I think I got it. If there's full employment and Kanye wants to have more Americans working to make America great again, we have to make more Americans need jobs. Make children work because they don't need education. Make elderly work because Social Security has no money. make others, like prisoners, into slaves. By abolishing the 13th Amendment, more people are employable. That means he can get cheap workers because slavery. Randy in PA says, is involuntary servitude the same as indentured servitude? Because I was subject to the latter. Indentured is voluntary. At least the way it was practiced in, say, the 16th and 17th, well, more like the 17th and 18th centuries in what is now the United States. It was a contractual arrangement of sorts. Anyway. So, here we are. On the first day of October 2018, in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century. And we're actually discussing the contemplation of the abolition of the constitutional amendment that banned slavery. This really is contextually somewhat breathtaking. Sometimes the visuals I get, they're hard to share, but let's just put it this way. Les just sent me a picture, really. Kanye West, computer-aged 30 years into the future, and if I'm not mistaken, that's Uncle Ruckus. Does make a fair amount of sense. But, so having looked at the text of the 13th Amendment, we can now go back to the fact that has declared that he misspoke when he tweeted. Wouldn't that be mistweeted? Not misspoke? He mistweeted? Oh, that was a mistweet. Poor little language. Poor, useful, lovely, helpful, broad, expansive little language. He showed up on TMZ Live, did, and was interviewed by someone named Harvey Levin. And he explained, abolish was the wrong language. I misspoke by saying abolish. Amend is the right language. And then, in an act of pure genius, said, there's power in words. What's beautiful about our Constitution is, he continued, we can amend it. He said he kind of got straightened up because a friend of his, who is also, like him, from Chicago, quote, puts a lot of energy into understanding historical facts. In 1865, the 13th Amendment stated that no man is destined to slavery or involuntary servitude unless convicted of a crime. He read this. It's not like he had it committed to whatever passes for his brain. He read it off the screen of his phone. And then he added, this translates to, in order to make a freed man a slave, all you have to do is convict them of a crime. Yeah, no. At this point, the aforementioned Harvey Levin who was probably struggling with his own tenuous grasp on reality as a result of what he was going through, said, "They carve out prison for involuntary servitude, and you can use prison as a pretext to bring involuntary servitude back. Is that what you're saying?" "Well, it has," the added. "There's people getting paid 8 cents a week working for companies that are privately owned, and a lot of them are first-time offenders. A lot of them are nonviolent crimes." And then there were tweets after the initial tweet in which the said, "The 13th Amendment," spelling the correctly in that case, or non-Elizabethanly, I suppose, if that's a word. "The 13th Amendment is slavery in disguise, meaning it never ended. We are the solution that heals. Not abolish, but let's amend the 13th Amendment. We apply everyone's opinions to our platform." Does that help you? Tracy, anything? Oh, I misinterneted. I misspoke. I'm speaking, so I can misspoke. That looks an awful lot like Uncle Ruckus, but no. Les informs me. Close. I thought maybe they were doing a live action. Well, never mind. Close, it's Steven from Django Unchained, but the same concept. Maybe they were trying to make him... Well, never mind. Oh, the stupid it hurts is us. So there's a great idea for the for the convention of the states to contemplate. By the way, Ron Monkey DeSantis down in Florida has endorsed the Constitution of the states. In case you were wondering, you weren't. Ron DeSantis thinks it would be just nifty to go in and reinvent the Constitution without all those pesky human rights in it. One of which, if he was invited to the, if he happened to be invited to the festivities, the would suggest one of the things needing to be thrown out would be the 13th Amendment. So, can you imagine what this country would do? Well, it doesn't take much imagination. Tracy, sometimes you know, minimalism is the best response. Tracy says, "All I have to say is WTF and STFU," which I... presume is directed at thee and not me. "Not to rain on your word knowing parade, Brother Bob, but I'm pretty sure he was going for yay." He spells it Y-A-Y. It's a double entendre referencing his name, Kanye, as well as a reference to yayo, as in cocaine. He fancies himself a wee bit of a gangster. Maybe it was the coke talking. But wait. There may be more at work here than actually meets the eye. Because I ran across a story earlier today. It's from yesterday's New York Times. by Caitlin Dickerson. Caitlin, Ms. Dickerson writes, in shelters from Kansas to New York, hundreds of migrant children have been roused in the middle of the night in recent weeks and loaded onto buses with backpacks and snacks for a cross-country journey to their new home, a barren tent city on a sprawling patch of desert in West Texas. Until now, most undocumented children being held by federal immigration authorities have been housed in private foster homes or shelters, sleeping two or three to a room. They received formal schooling and regular visits with legal representatives assigned to their immigration cases. But in the rows of sand-colored tents in Tornillo, Texas, children in groups of 20, separated by gender, sleep, lined up in bunks. There's no school. The children are given workbooks that they have no obligation to complete. Access to legal services is limited. These midnight voyages are playing out across the country as the federal government struggles to find room for more than 13,000, New York Times says, detained migrant children. I'm looking for the word kidnapped here. The largest population ever, whose numbers have increased more than fivefold since last year. According to the Department of Health and Human Services, the time spent in these kiddie concentration camps has nearly doubled over the same period of time, from 34 days to 59. And a mass reshuffling, Ms. Dickerson writes, is underway. Hundreds of children are being shipped from shelters to Tornillo in West Texas each week, totaling more than 1,600 so far. Have they put up the sign yet that says, work makes y'all free? It's about 35 miles southeast of El Paso on the Mexican border. It has portable toilets. The tents are air-conditioned, and they use them for housing and recreation and medical care. It was originally opened in June for 30 days. It had a capacity of 400. It expanded in September to be able to house 3,800. And is expected now to remain open through the end of the year. Evelyn Stauffer, a spokescreep for the Health and Human Services Department, dissembled as follows. It is common to use influx shelters as done on military bases in the past, and the intent is to use these temporary facilities only as long as needed. The only regulations for the tent city in Tornillo, the concentration camp in Tornillo, the only thing they've got are guidelines created by DHHS. And those guidelines do not include a requirement to provide any level of education whatsoever to the kidnapped children. This paragraph. Several shelter workers who spoke on condition of anonymity for fear of being fired described what they said has become standard practice for moving the children. In order to avoid escape attempts, the moves are carried out late at night because children will be less likely to try to run away. For the same reason, children are generally given little advance warning that they will be moved. In one instance, about 24 children were given just a few hours' notice last week before they were loaded onto buses. Any longer than that, according to one of the shelter workers, and the children may have panicked or tried to flee. They wore belts etched in pen with phone numbers for their emergency contacts. One young boy asked the shelter worker if he would be taken care of in Texas. The shelter worker replied that he would and told him that by moving, he was making space for other children like him who were stuck at the border and needed a place to live. My God. My God. So, when the talks about amending the 13th Amendment, well, a constitution without a 13th Amendment makes some level of slavery acceptable. And who better to enslave than children who are documented under the most sketchy of circumstances at best? In fact, if you look back at the history of slavery in the United States and the colonies before that, you will find that, that children born into slavery tended to remain slaves for the rest of their natural born lives. And how about that? We take active measures to make sure that we don't have any runaway detainees. Next thing you know, Congress will be passing a Runaway Detainee Act. And I have a feeling that certain states will respond to that absolutely the same way that certain states responded to the Runaway Slave Act. What? Is that you, Mr. Dred Scott? I thought so. Jesus jumping Christ. So, you never know what the is going to get when he has his little conversations with the Chlamydia Claudius. But boy, howdy, I tell you what, if you wanted the necessary employment provide goods in factories in the United States, made by people in the United States, not necessarily citizens, mind you, and you wanted to pay them about the same rate that, say, some kid chained to a table in China is paid, well, that, what you got right, 3,800 undocumented kids? Why, that's a workforce. That's probably enough little undocumented kids to maybe staff a factory or two for the. Note coming in from Clarence. Bob, the first thing that needs to be abolished is Kanye's stupidity. That may be a tall order. It's hard to fix stupidity when it is surrounded by mountains of money. Notice witness the occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, if you doubt me. James in Illinois, Donnie, via Kanye. Do you suppose Drumpf told Kanye how badly the 13th was received and that the Democrats screwed the freedmen by many various devices, and the slaves weren't really freed until Republicans gave them the vote? Did he convince Kanye that he could be instrumental in creating a whole new and better system? Is he Donnie's dupe? I like to think of them as twin doofuses of different mothers. But here's the thing. If you consider the issues that have roiled the White Wing for ages, and I mean, well pre, you know, pre-Trump. Remember, most of the problems we wind up discussing here, while they are exacerbated and made even more stupid to begin with than they were to begin with by Trump, did not begin with Trump. Trump didn't start birtherism. He capitalized on it. He tapped into that vast and mighty, filthy underground river of sewage that is the White Wing mindset and let it gush forth in a geyser to the surface that became his version of birtherism, but it was there all along. And in this instance, what the White Wing really despises, well, okay, if you get them drunk enough down to the clavern, they will go on ad nauseam about the 13th Amendment, but it's the 14th Amendment that creates birthright citizenship. If you're born here, you're a citizen of the United States. And that drives the White Wing right up a tree. They hate the 14th Amendment. They loathe the 14th Amendment. And in fact, they came up with a term to describe children born here to immigrant parents. They like to call them anchor babies. Kind of the way that, say, Donald Trump and his siblings were anchor babies for Mary, who came here illegally from Scotland. You see what I mean? So there's, in something as simple as a tweet that is chock-a-block with stupidity, when you're talking about the White Wing in America and step and fetch it's like Kanye West, who enable and empower it, there's really more to unpack than meets the eye. Lee in New York, subject line, Runaway Detainee Act. You know what that act would look like? Democratic version, shoot first and questions later. Republican version, shoot first and shoot second. Some sad truth in that. True enough, Lee in New York pointing out, when there are voices in your head, a poorly worded tweet is also a misspeak. Those voices in his head almost stopped him from clicking send. But then they just pulled up a little short. Marty remembers. Anchor babies. Michelle Malkin's favorite term. An anti-anchor baby. Anchor baby. Mm-hmm. Checking messages here. Clarity pointing out hatred, anger, and ignorance are the holy GOP trinity. Beyond that, it's the fuel that fires their engine. I don't know. Everything seems to be running well. Dustin said, "Hold up, Bob. I'm connected to FYI Nation through TuneIn, and right now I'm listening to Dead Air. What happened?" Let me take a peep over here. Let me just ask. We'll find out in a second. 4 minutes past the hour, and I was hoping I would not have to say this, but okay, Anatole says it's okay. But, you know, we're 5 minutes past the hour. And we've got Shirley's Memorial Challenge on the table this evening. And it is thus far unresponded to. All I can say is, please, don't let this kind and generous offer to double contributions on the first day of the month go by the boards. That happened last month. Please, let's not have that happen again. Interesting photo of Brett Kavanaugh in the chat room. Not sure if Squeeze in it or not, but... how about that? Kavanaugh sent text messages to his friend to refute the Ramirez claims, Sparky points out. NBC News reporting, text messages suggest Kavanaugh wanted to refute accuser's claim before it became public. A former classmate of the Supreme Court nominee has reached out to the FBI but hasn't received a response. I think we should probably talk about that. And yeah, it's a photo of Deborah Ramirez, Carrie Burcham, Doug Millett, Karen Yara Savage, Kevin Genda, Brett Kavanaugh, and David White as they pose for a photo at the rehearsal dinner before the wedding of Yara Savage, and Genda in 1997. Heidi Prisbilla and Leanne Caldwell writing for NBC News. In the days leading up to a public allegation that Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh exposed himself to a college classmate, the judge and his team were communicating behind the scenes with friends to refute the claim, according to text messages obtained by NBC News. Carrie Burcham, who was at Yale with both Kavanaugh and his accuser, Deborah Ramirez, has tried to get those messages to the FBI for its newly reopened investigation into the matter, but says she has yet to be contacted by the Bureau. Because the FBI investigation has been severely curtailed and has had boundaries put on it that essentially are designed by the White House to prevent it from being effective. By the way, in the photograph, Deborah Ramirez is about as far away from Brett Kavanaugh as she can get and still be barely in the frame of the photo. The texts demonstrate that Kavanaugh and Ramirez were more socially connected than previously understood, and that Ramirez was uncomfortable around Kavanaugh when they saw each other at a wedding 10 years after they graduated. Burcham's efforts also show that some potential witnesses have been unable to get important information to the FBI. How often is it that people are begging the FBI to be heard, and the FBI says, is that the dog barking? Today, an unnamed senior U.S. official confirmed that the White House has authorized the FBI to expand its initially limited investigation by interviewing anyone it deems necessary as long as the review is finished by the end of the week. Now, wait a minute. You can interview every person on the planet as long as you get it done by Friday. By the way, Burcham is a partner in the law firm Akin Gump. And she wrote back, I understand that President Trump and the U.S. Senate have ordered an FBI investigation into certain allegations of sexual misconduct by the nominee Brett Kavanaugh. I have no direct or indirect knowledge about any of the allegations against him. However, I am in receipt of text messages from a mutual friend of both Debbie and mine that raise questions related to the allegations. I have not drawn any conclusions as to what the texts may mean or may not mean, but I do believe they merit investigation by the FBI and the Senate. Beginning yesterday, she emailed FBI agent J.C. McDonough her memo. She got no response. She resent the summary today, this morning, along with screenshots of certain texts. Ms. Burcham said, I'm sure he's really busy and I expect that he'll get back to me. Meanwhile, Chinless Mitch, desperate to get Kavanaugh onto the court, says the Senate will vote this week on whether to confirm him. So, wait and see. Ms. Burcham has had to hire counsel now, trying to get her information in front of the relevant eyeballs. Here's what it boils down to. Ms. Yarasavage, I don't know, Yarasavage, in a series of text messages said she'd been in contact with, quote, Brett's guy, unquote, and she'd also been in contact with Brett, and they wanted her to go on the record to refute Debbie Ramirez. Yarasavage also said that she turned over a copy of the wedding party photo to Kavanaugh, writing in a text, I had to send it to Brett's team, too. So what's the argument here? Well, there's a lot of people at a wedding, so, and there's people in wedding pictures that don't know each other. Jesus. Steve in New York with a note. Subject line, Banana Republic. Isn't part of the definition of a Banana Republic that there is a show demonstration of procedures and formalities, but in actuality, they're nothing but window dressing on a foregone conclusion? Why, yes, Steve, yes, there is. That's exactly what a Banana Republic does. It makes it puts great stock in and makes a great show out of pomp and circumstance and protocol and procedure, but in point of fact is driven by nothing, absolutely nothing more than the raw, naked exercise of blunt force political power. And in some instances, violence to boot. In a September 24th text message, Burcham wrote to Yarasavage, Deborah Ramirez clung to me. She never went near them, a reference to Kavanaugh and his friends. Even in the group photo, Burcham wrote, Ramirez was trying to keep away from Kavanaugh. And that is a wedding in 1997, when they were both in the wedding party. He's dirty. And in point of fact, Jeff Flake, he of the rubber-tipped arrows, if you read the stories over the weekend about the heartfelt conversation he had with Chris Coons of Delaware, Chris Coons of Delaware is apparently doing as much as he possibly can to sway Flake And they agreed in an interview that regardless of whether, and this is kind of a big deal, if Flake actually sticks to his guns, they agreed that regardless of whether it turns out that there is or is not dispositive proof of an encounter such as described by Dr. Ford, and by the way, the next pampered, powdered panjandrum from the for-profit media who describes the differing accounts. Well, they're not even accounts. Kavanaugh doesn't have an account. As he said, she said, should probably not ever practice anything referring to itself as journalism again. Because he said, she said is not what happened. She said, she testified 100%. She said she is 100% certain that it was Brett Kavanaugh who tried to molest her that night so many years ago. And she testified credibly. He, on the other hand, talked about beer. He, on the other hand, said, it didn't happen, but didn't offer much beyond that except for a lot of bluster and spit. Jesus. It's more in Monday for a reason. Thank you. Steve from Georgia Stan says, sounds good on the TuneIn app on the Xbox One. Cool, thank you. Let's check some other emails. Albert in Rhode Island. Bob, the remark about West deserves a cowbell. Dave in Tallahassee says, Bob, I guess there'll be a new business that the West founds. Slave Traders R Us with the West as president. And Jesse Lee Peterson as spokescreep for a veneer of intellectual responsibility doctor, and I use the term advisedly, Ben Carson. Frankly, any of these asshats need to have themselves handed to each other, your buddy Dave. Cowbell for the remark about West. That's courtesy of Albert, who also says, my favorite episode, talking about Beverly Hillbillies, really, involved Jethro buying a sports car. He traded in their truck for its down payment. Granny bought the truck back. Jed insisted that they have a race. Whoever won got to keep their vehicle. Jethro cheated by draining the truck's gas tank. Granny took a sip of her rheumatism medicine, then poured the jug into the truck's gas tank. The truck blew away the car. Surprised it didn't blow up the car. Powerful stuff, that rheumatism medicine. But no, it's not he said, she said. He said, she said is something entirely different. On the other hand, from the Department of Please Stop Helping Again, Julius Geezer today, during something that passed for a news conference, said, speaking of Kavanaugh, I watched him. I was surprised how vocal he was about the fact that he likes beer, and he's had a little bit of difficulty. He talked about things that happened when he drank. I mean, this is not a man who said he's perfect with respect to alcohol. There's only one problem. Kavanaugh utterly denied having a problem with booze, but it's pretty clear that teetotal and Trump is at least convinced that he does have one. And, well, I graduated from high school. Really? Did you, Jethro? I graduated from sixth grade. And while I didn't drink, I saw people drinking. They drink beer, go crazy. Does that mean they can't do something that they want to do with their lives? It's a very tough thing. And by the way, the count, somebody bothered to count. The beer reference count during meltdown. The count was 29 mentions. 29 mentions of beer, beer drinking, and how he doesn't have a beer drinking problem. The pull quote, of course. I liked beer. I still like beer. But I did not drink beer to the point of blacking out, and I never sexually assaulted anyone. There's a bright line between drinking beer, which I gladly do and which I fully embrace, and sexually assaulting someone, which is a violent crime, and I didn't embrace. No, I added the embrace part. If every American who drinks beer or every American who drank beer in high school is suddenly presumed guilty of sexual assault, it will be an ugly new place in this country. Of course, that's not the nature of the allegation. I'll bet you Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch, who is as nasty a piece of right-wing work as you're likely to ever come across, bet you he drinks beer, but there's no allegation of sexual assault on him, even though he went to the same Jesuit prep school that Kavanaugh went to. Whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much, and vodka puts my mouth in gear. I like beer, sang Tom T. Hall. And apparently, Brett Kavanaugh agrees. And yeah, it's difficult to talk about visuals on a radio program. But if you have not seen the viral... It blew up, it went viral. The editorial cartoon of a pair of suited, cufflinked arms, hands at the end, with GOP elephant cufflinks, holding down Lady Justice's arms with its hand over her mouth. Whew. That's powerful. That artist probably would have been fired from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. You know, for Les Majesté. But then there's what happened today. The mocking, yet again, of another reporter by Julius Geiser. Surrounded by a whole bunch of men... A female reporter put forward a question. This was ostensibly a news conference about the sketchy trade deal that's been hammered out that, among other things, contains no references whatsoever on the Canadian portion or the Mexican portion to indigenous rights. But it's a great agreement, a beautiful agreement. Because, well, the syphilitic Caesar, he don't much like Indians.
She's shocked that I picked her.
No.
In a state of shock.
Yeah. So he called on Cecilia Vega from ABC News, who apparently didn't... shout out, MAGA! or something like that.
She's shocked that I picked her.
No.
She's in a state of shock.
I'm not thinking, Mr.
That's
President.
Okay. I know you're not thinking. You never do.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
In a tweet this weekend, Mr. President, you said that it's incorrect to say you're limiting the scope of the FBI investigation.
What does that have to do with trade? I don't mind answering the question, but, you know, I'd like to do the trade question.
It has to do with the other headline in the news, which is the Kavanaugh
nomination. I know, but how about talking about trade, and then we'll get to that. We'll do that a little bit later.
Do you think the
anybody have a trade?
Do you think
ahead,
your trade
please.
Deal will pass through Congress, sir?
I think so, but, you know, if it doesn't, we have lots of other alternatives. But I do think so. I think if they're fair, which is a big question, but if it's fair on both sides, the Republicans love it, industry loves it, our country loves it. If it's fair, it will pass. I think it'll pass easily, really easily, because it's a great deal. I mean, NAFTA passed. It's one of the worst deals I've ever seen. Inconceivable that it was made. Fair question. Any other questions
Thank
on trade?
You.
I'll get back to you on the other question.
I'd like to go forward with my Kavanaugh question.
Let's do that later, and but I'll call you a second time. Go ahead, please. Thank you.
At which point, a White House flack lady stands up and takes the message away, or microphone away from Cecilia Vega. She's in shock. She's surprised I called on her. I know you're not thinking. You never do. What a piece of shit. What a revolting pile of excrement he is. And apparently, I don't mind answering the question, but, you know, I'd like to do the trade questions, and then we get to that. Well, he eventually did find his way back to Cecilia Vega.
Behind you, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now that you've answered several questions on trade, I'd like to turn to Judge Kavanaugh.
Excuse me. Do you have a question on trade? We'll do one or two more questions on trade.
You've answered several questions
okay,
on
don't
trade.
Do that. That's not nice.
Mr. President,
and besides that, somebody is before you. Excuse me. Don't do that. Do you have a question on trade?
You answered several questions
Do you have
on trade?
A question on trade?
My question is on Judge
okay,
Kavanaugh.
Okay, please, yes,
You said
please.
The FBI should interview whoever that they believe is appropriate. Does that include Julie Swetnick, the third accuser? And can you promise to release the full findings
give me your
the FBI
question, please.
After they finish their report, Mr. President?
Give me your question, please. Give her the mic, please.
Thank you very much. Was border security...
How about that? Isn't that lovely? Now, that's another female reporter who can't stand in solidarity with her own sister. I mean, not blood relative sister, but... The proper answer, if you're a member of the press corps, is no, take her question. No questions on trade for you until you answer the question that was put to you. You are a public servant, dumbass, not a public dictator. Act like a servant. Be a servant. This guy despises women. Pretty much all of them. And he remains the greatest embarrassment to this country that has ever existed in the White House, or at least since, well, the reign of error.
Are funding
yes.
for the wall discussed during the negotiation,
yes.
and who will pay for the
yes,
wall?
Yes, the wall. We're getting $1.6 billion for the wall this year. We got $1.6. We have about $3.2 billion in the wall. We're doing a lot of work people don't realize. I don't really want to talk about it because I could build it quickly at one time, which is what I want.
But
we've been building it over the last year and a half with $3.2 billion, $1.6, and we now have another $1.6. And I.
Yeah. So that has nothing to do with trade with Canada or Mexico, except for the fact that, well, it's going to have some impact. But. Anything to... He did finally get around to Kavanaugh, but... Right.
This weekend you said it's incorrect to say that you're limiting the scope of the FBI investigation into Judge Kavanaugh, but your own statement on Friday made it very clear. You said this investigation must be limited in scope. So which is it?
Well, no, I didn't say anything on Friday. What I said is, let the Senate decide whatever they want to do is okay with me. And also the FBI. I think the FBI should do what they have to do to get to the answer. At the same time, just so we all understand, this is our seventh investigation of a man who has really, you know, you look at his life until this happened. What a change he's gone through.
Really? When did he change? But more to the point, this is his seventh investigation. It's the first investigation that has ever dealt with the issues of his propensity for alleged sexual assault or attempted sexual assault, or, by the way, kidnapping and false imprisonment. Those were not inquired into before. And by the way, what I was saying earlier is Coons and Flake seem to agree that outside the issue of whether or not he assaulted Dr. Ford, and I believe Dr. Ford, what Flake said is if he lied to the Senate, his nomination is done. Now, this would be a watershed moment in Republican Senate history, because they have blithely sat and watched Supreme Court nominees lie like a rug that couldn't have been any more of a rug if it had had a chin strap attached to it. Nomination after nomination after nomination. Think back to John Roberts. Oh, I'll just call balls and strikes. Goodbye, Civil Rights Act. Right. But Jeff Flake says that if it's proven he lied, his nomination is ended. Well, there's really no question that he lied. Hell, I mean, if it's just lying... Lying about the legal drinking age in Maryland at the time that this was allegedly taking place is enough. That is a lie on a material fact under oath before the Senate. Goodbye, Brett. Goodbye. But will Jeff Flake stand by his own words? Well, therein lies the question. And remember, as long as we're doing math, you've still got to have Joe Manchin vote no. And then you've got to pick off two Republican senators. So you got to have Flake and Murkowski, or Flake and Collins, or Murkowski and Collins, and you got to have Joe Manchin vote no. I'm merely pointing out that that makes for a tall mountain to climb. Now, where Joe Manchin is concerned, and I don't know if you've seen this or not, but there was some polling done by an outfit captive to a shadowy, skeevy, dark money bunch called the Judicial Crisis Network. Now, the Judicial Crisis Network is behind the millions and millions and millions of dollars that have been spent on, among other things, Facebook ads and ads during, say, Morning Joe. To demand the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. So they're not exactly a neutral polling bunch. But they had polling done in West Virginia. And man, this number just keeps coming back and coming back and coming back. 52% of women, according to this poll, in West Virginia want Joe Manchin to vote yes on Kavanaugh. 52% of women. Just like after the Access Hollywood tape came out, 52% of women, I'm sorry, 52% of white women said, he can grab me by the pussy. And I apologize. That's such a sickening phrase. But that's effectively what they did when 52% of white women in America went to the polls and voted for Trump. 52% of white women in America voted for a man who admitted, you know, not like Brett Kavanaugh, who deny, lie, who admitted that he commits sexual batteries. And 52% of white women in America went, okay. Well, 52% of white women, because this is one of the whitest states in the nation, I imagine there's a little handful of women of color in that number, in that number as well. But in polling of West Virginians, you can pretty much say white people. 52% of white women in West Virginia said, who cares? Put him on the court. Because fetuses. Because women's rights don't matter. Because the right to terminate a pregnancy doesn't matter. Put him on the court. Here's the problem. Democrats in the state of West Virginia still enjoy a numerical support, a superiority in terms of registrations over Republicans. Independents are in the mix, too. But as we know, independents, as often as not, vote their political party leanings. They just don't like to be identified with the political party. And in states with open primaries, that's just a recipe for chaos. But again, this is polling data coming from a partisan outfit that wants its dark money donors. We don't really know who funds the Judicial Crisis Network because of Citizens United. Thanks, Justice Kennedy. You swing vote, you. Brother Deacon Asa says, the Judicial Crisis Network is incidentally the same temp agency that provides all the crisis actors after each school shooting. Just saying. Mm-hmm. But they have to show that they're getting bang for their buck. And so whoever their dark money funders are, hi Chuck, hi Dave, nothing does that better than saying, hey, look, we found out that 52% of white women in West Virginia want Kavanaugh. Heck, 52% of white women in West Virginia probably like to have Brett Kavanaugh put his hand over their mouth and grope them over their swimsuits. I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. But the thing is, those 52% of white women in West Virginia are largely probably maggots. And so the question is, how many Democrats in West Virginia will stand up and say, oh, hell no, to Joe Manchin at the prospect of him voting yes on Kavanaugh? Here's the thing. Joe Manchin needs the Democratic base more than he needs the maggots, because the maggots are going to vote for the pill pusher anyway, pill pushing Patrick Morrissey, because they have no morals. They have no ethics. And they don't care whose kids get destroyed by pills or fentanyl or heroin, because it'll never happen to their kids. Except it already has, and it will continue. So 52% of white women in West Virginia want Kavanaugh confirmed. 48% of white of women in West Virginia say no, or maybe it's 52 and 45 and 3 undecided and margins of error and all that statistical stuff. So watch Joe very closely, because a quote that was given over the weekend said by a staffer, and it was quickly walked back to a certain extent, that said that Joe will be a yes vote for Kavanaugh unless it can be definitively proven that he tried to assault Dr. Ford, or that Kavanaugh would vote to gut health care for Americans. Because the majority of West Virginians are dependent to one degree or another on some level of health care as it is manifested under the Affordable Care Act and the Medicaid expansion. West Virginia does have the Medicaid expansion. The health care would be a good out. For West Virginians who are reaching out to Joe, you might point out, or anybody reaching out to Joe, you might point out that the man's judicial record makes abundantly clear that he's a threat. He's a threat to the Affordable Care Act. And I want to go back to another issue here in a minute, but... let's check in with a few emails. I don't know if anyone else noticed, but the way Trump shouted down the female reporter at the press conference today was chauvinistic and disgusting. Oh, I think a lot of us noted Steve from Georgia Stan. It's just that some, like you probably, the rest of us weren't at all surprised, because that's who he is. Steve in New York says, it's a great agreement. So this agreement will never go anywhere. Why? That pesky little thing called Senate ratification. You wonder. Look back to NAFTA and how it got through like through a goose. Meanwhile, Steve from Georgia Stan says, let's be real, Bob. It's my turn to be a little ray of fucking sunshine, but let's be real. We will have a sexual predator confirmed to SCOTUS by week's end. I'm starting to think this whole flake thing was a ruse. As Hung Like Jesus says, Flake will live up to his name, and trust in this. If the cameras hadn't captured that whole elevator scene, he wouldn't have pressed pause on the vote. Good point. Alexander says, no, Brother Kincaid, it's not dark money. It's actually corrupt white boy money. There's nothing dark, people and or activity affiliated with that foul shit. It's all white folks doing that shit with the money because they have it. The people power and the clout to get it done. Such is not the case with most of the white supremacists of color in positions of supposed and limited power and authority. Please correct this, my brother. Thank you. That's well put. Maybe we should call it white money instead of dark money. Brett's nickname, according to Megan. Brett Kavanaugh shall herefore be known as Keg Stand Kavanaughty. Keg Stand Kavanaughty. That's pretty good. That's worth the jingle. Ron in Raleigh says, wouldn't it be nice if the world would stand in solidarity and tell this thug, this goon, to kiss their collective ass? There's talk about constructing a workaround to the sanctions that the orange asshole spreads so liberally. I'd love to see it happen. Jeremy in Vermont, Trump women and hate. Except his daughter, if things were different, he'd be dating her. Oh, who's to say he hasn't already?
You remind me of my daughter Ivanka. You were great.
James in Illinois is building that wall. He's not going to build it quickly without Mexican-American or otherwise labor. And if it were ever to be paid for by Mexico, it'd be all Mexican labor with blowout doors. Yeah, but the funny thing, as Beto O'Rourke pointed out, it's going to be built a half a mile inland on the U.S. side. So that means there's going to be a whole bunch of people. Imagine a strip a half a mile wide as long as the wall who are outside the wall. Hell, there's still litigation going on over Bush's fence. And some country club folks who don't much appreciate having the border fence running through their fairways. And I agree. Steve from Georgistan says, Maryland did have some strange alcohol laws back during that time frame. That was during my heyday, and if memory serves me correctly, you had to be 18 to drink beer and 21 to drink liquor. Not in 1982. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. Information on the Judicial Crisis Network. All we have to do is get it to open. But going back to Maryland law for a moment, and I'm on admittedly slippery ground here. We keep talking about attempted sexual assault and there are judicial rulings in any given state that will say when and under what circumstances an event goes from attempt to commission of the actual crime. But there are other potential crimes that might well apply. And before a lot of before the tizzy, well, that's not the right word, before the flurry of attempts to reclassify and recodify a bunch of crimes, there were common law crimes which were sort of dealt with generally in state codes. And again, I offer as a caveat on the front end, I don't have a copy of the criminal code of the state of Maryland. But we've got folks who had more than a cup of coffee in law school in the community, and this might be well worth considering. And the two crimes I'm thinking about are kidnapping and false imprisonment. Now, you hear the word kidnapping, and you tend to think in terms of, you know, some nefarious person grabbing someone and holding them for ransom and threatening to send pieces of digits along a little bit at a time if the ransom demand is not met. That is not necessarily the case. For instance, I went to have a look at the Maryland, the 2013 code of the state of Maryland. and I just looked up kidnapping. Section 3502. A person may not, by force or fraud, carry or cause a person to be carried in or outside the state with the intent to have the person carried or concealed in or outside the state. B, a person who violates this section is guilty of the felony of kidnapping and on conviction is subject to imprisonment not exceeding 30 years. C, kidnapping does not include the act of a parent in carrying a minor child of that parent in or outside the state. Carry or cause to be carried. That, to a layman's eyes, that would seem to presuppose some sort of a conveyance. But it does not. Carry simply means to move by some means other than the individual's own propulsion. Before the advent of wagons and automobiles, trains, buses, aircraft, carry meant to pick up and carry. In fact, if you go down south for very long, you might run into people who say, no, I can't come over right now. My nephews are coming over, and he's going to carry me to the grocery store. It's an antiquated usage, but the law is full of antiquated usages. A person may not, by force or fraud, okay, in the case of Dr. Ford, let's go through this. A person may not, by force or fraud, so in this case, the person would be Mark Judge and Brett Kavanaugh. By force or fraud, well, this would be force because they forced her into the bedroom. And that's when the music got turned up. She got pushed down. The hand was put over her mouth. And Kavanaugh allegedly began pawing all over her young body. Carry or cause a person to be carried in or outside the state. Well, obviously we're dealing with something that's happening inside Maryland. We're still okay. With the intent to have the person carried or concealed in or outside the state. Well, the intent in closing the door and turning up the music so that her screams could not be heard and putting the hand over her mouth was for the purpose, with the intent, to have young Christine Blasey concealed inside the state of Maryland. And again, I'm looking at 2013. I don't know what that statute was in 1982. Or if they merely relied on common law definitions. Domestic violence, again, by the time you're all the way back to 1982, it might as well be caveman days. Because most of those situations relied upon common law definitions. But within the common law definitions available, well, one of those is false imprisonment. And false imprisonment does not, as the term would seem to denote, involve prisons. It is more a matter of detention of a person against their will by force or threat. This, too, is applicable to the situation that Dr. Ford described. Incidentally, it's also applicable to a situation described by another victim who says that she was forced to perform oral sex in an automobile. And that once again, a hand was put over her mouth. And that she was compelled to perform fellatio, I believe, in an automobile. This is in an anonymous letter that was sent to Senator Blumenthal. So, it's just something to ponder. Because when you confine someone against their will, whether it be in a room or a building or a pit, there are legal definitions that apply to it. And if there was something like Maryland Criminal Code Section 3502 that was in effect in 1982... we may be missing the boat entirely. Because that may be the crime that he actually committed. Or false imprisonment. I'm not saying anything definitively. But it's worth a look. I wish we had some lawyers from Maryland in the community. By the way, I've had a chance to review the information on the Judicial Crisis Network. Among other things, it is run by an individual named Carrie Severino. Once again, a Harvard grad. The mischief that those two colleges have perpetrated on this country. Carrie Severino, though, was among other things, and the Judicial Crisis Network started out as the Judicial Confirmation Network back during the Reign of Error. But Carrie Severino, who runs it, has been involved with the ongoing challenges to the Affordable Care Act and the ability of American citizens to go to the damn doctor when they're sick. So just in, I may just have to, maybe that'll be a part of one of my many phone calls to Joe Manchin's office. They blew through $10 million running ads for Ann's boy, Neil. And so far, they've shot through about $4.5 million in ad buys as of August 2018 for Brett Kavanaugh, keg stand Kavanaugh. And we haven't even gotten to the other Moran Monday nominee yet. But just the same, I've got an update. And thank you very kindly. Yes, I'll get right on that, Charlene. Charlene took down Shirley's Memorial Challenge. By half. And then Steve from Georgistan and Miss Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy kicked in another $10. So we've only got $90 to go in the next hour to finish off Shirley's Memorial Challenge. Thank you. Thank you, Steve, and thank you very kindly, Charlene. Thank you very much indeed. some emails from James in Illinois. But Bob, Kavanaugh is an incredible person. Noticed that, did you? Over the weekend, in a very subdued manner, the chlamydia Claudius said that he found Dr. Ford's testimony to be credible. And then, because the goddess of irony just owns his adipose ass, he went on to say, and Brett Kavanaugh is incredible, incredible. Incredible. Not credible. Not believable. Kind of the way when he was asked if he assaulted Dr. Ford. Well, the goddess of irony caused Brett Kavanaugh to nod his head yes at the same time saying no. David in South Carolina, Stan, what beer brand for Brett? I do remember Prep's frat boys went for cheap-ass draft from kegs. It was quantity over quality. 80s, so was it Tuborg? Lowenbrow? Was Bud Light out yet? Oh, yes, it was. Maybe my imagination, but it seems like Bud in Longnecks was decent way back then. It was still rice beer. Let's see. Well, I know by the time I got to WVU, the keg of choice was, and I mean, beer bars, you know, little student taverns, things like that. The beer of choice was IC Light, but then again, Morgantown's 75 miles south of Pittsburgh, so Iron City Light. Whew, some bad beer. Bud Light comes out long about 1982, but it was also expensive. I've speculated along with some friends of mine who are from the area, and the consensus seems to be that they were probably drinkers of what is referred to as Natty Bo, National Bohemian. Terrace with a note. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I did get that wrong. I said Richard Blumenthal. I was wrong. Thank you, Darlene in Connecticut. No, the latest allegation was sent in an anonymous letter with no return address to Kamala Harris's office, not to Blumenthal. The victim lives in California. She doesn't appear to name the assailant in the back seat. And she claims they repeatedly raped her after the forced oral by Kavanaugh. Very graphic. Wonder if the boy in the back seat was Judge. They seem to work as a team. And I'm gonna say this at some hazard. And I hope it is understood in the spirit in which I offer it, which is good faith. There is, I have some concern because Republicans invented the concept of rat fucking. And remember, Brett Kavanaugh was a member of a group that referred to themselves as the Elves, who specialized in political dirty work. I'm concerned that eventually there will be somebody out there or some allegation that will be put out there, and then it will make its way through into the zeitgeist. At which point, the progenitor of it will say, "Ha ha! I was lying. You believed me, just like you believed all the others. Well, I was lying. This is all a fake, and your fake news and your fake media, just like our God Emperor Trump says." Is my fear founded? Or is my paranoia just taking over? Oh, okay. Well, there's that too. Ron in Raleigh says, "I'm going with how about Meisterbrow? That was pretty nasty. How about Bush?" And way in the way back, wasn't natural light already a thing? Who was it? Was it Norm Crosby that was the spokesperson for natural light? David in South Carolina, GOP seems to always write cheap porn. Well, they're conservatives after all. It has to be cheap. Meanwhile, Agnes says, "Nah, he's a Colt 45 man." Oh, that's brutal. But then again, it'll get you fucked up fast. And apparently that was the goal. Remember, he was a member of the 100 Kegs Club. Anatole says they didn't have natural light back then. The ad hoc horn research department will take up this crucial issue in short order. I still bet it was Natty Bo. Okay, let's see. Flavio, Cecilia Vega, 5 fast facts. "She's somebody," says Flavio. "Trump is a piece of shit." Because once she was treated like Trump treats women, I guess the internet wanted to know who she is. And according to Heavy.com, she's had prior run-ins with the Trump regime. She's the one that Aunt Lydia, Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags, said had made a ridiculous accusation when she simply asked her, "Can you say the president has never lied to the American people?" So many look back at the tape of him on Air Force One saying he knew nothing about the payments, when in fact we know now he knew everything about the payments. So has he lied? Well, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbag said, "I think that's a ridiculous accusation." She's also referred to his attacks on the media as incitement. She's won an Emmy. She started out in print journalism as a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Then she worked for KGO ABC7 in San Francisco. And that's where she got the Emmy. And she graduated from American University in D.C. in 1999. The great beer debate goes on. Ron suggests perhaps Carling Black Label, very fizzy, very cheap. And that's true. That was some seriously cheap. And by the way, as we move into the third hour of the program, with $90 to go in funding, Larry in Liberalville says, "I'll take $40 of your October 1 challenge." So that means we have $50 to go to finish Shirley's Memorial Challenge, previously Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge when our dear friend Bruce was running it. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Larry. That's tremendous. I think we want to talk about beer tonight. I think we're so desperate to steer out of the filth that we're just happy to ponder what kind of shitty beer they were drinking. David in South Carolina says, for pretentious beers, I think Tuborg because of the Buffett song. And get drunk on Tuborg beer. Things were better off than I had feared. Miss you so badly. Took me a minute. But for parties, it was kegs of cheap stuff. Old Milwaukee. Oh, and was 82 after Coors came east? Used to be a thing to smuggle Coors back east, but yeah, not in kegs. Yeah, that was the entire plot line of Smokey and the Bandit, wasn't it? Steve from Georgia Stan says, back in 1982, beings that were rich frat boys with money probably wasn't that much of an issue. I'd say they tried the whole gamut, including Budweiser ponies that came in 7-ounce 8-packs. There were 6 8-packs to a case. They probably hit the proprietary Coors keg ball as well. Did the keg ball come out yet? And I remember the 8-packs of Miller ponies. Did Budweiser do ponies too? We loved those ponies. Randy in PA suggesting Rolling Rock or PBR. I'm still coming back to Natty Bo. I'm sorry. What? Rolling Rock? From the glass-lined tanks of old latrine? You betcha. Whatever it was, says Darlene in Connecticut, must have tasted nasty, but I do love my 1970s Knickerbocker beer clock nonetheless. Oh, Darlene, that's a piece of art. Rupert Knickerbocker, a guy in a tricorn hat holding up a frosty glass mug of beer. That's nice. That's nice. Flavio says Black Label was had by the case in high school. Yeah, because dirt cheap. Meanwhile, Hung Like Jesus says, y'all don't know drinking until you consume 2 40s of Schlitz Malt Liquor Bull. Woo! Next thing you know, you're just wandering around behind little animals. I've had and Colt 45 and Old English 800. Oh, that's funny. Les says, Judge, prize, her, insert 3 frogs here. So at 13 minutes past the hour, I filibobstered for 2 hours and 13 minutes. If anybody'd like to get involved in the conversation, I just kind of blew past it. I apologize. But anybody wants to get involved in the conversation, you're more than welcome. The other nominee, and it is painful to listen to on multiple levels. Is what happened yesterday with Kellyanne Conway. Oh, by the way, just on the as we breeze past, Kate McKinnon did a brilliant takedown of Lindsey Graham. It could have been funnier. But as it was, the line, just give this man a robe and let him do whatever the hell he wants, is a pretty concise statement of the intent of the Republican caucus. Hey, thank you very kindly to Alex in Kentucky. Thank you, Alex. Coupled with Larry from Liberalville's commitment, we have met Shirley's Memorial Challenge. Thank you, Alex. Thank you very, very kindly. Even if the FBI links him to sexual assault, Lindsey Graham has said, my mind's made up. My mind's made up about Brett Kavanaugh, and it would take a dynamite accusation. Because here's the deal, Dr. Ford, I don't know what happened, but I know this. Brett denied it vigorously, and everybody she named couldn't verify it. It's 36 years old, and Judge Kavanaugh was so butch. I don't see anything new changing my mind. Yeah. Ew. But maybe we'll get to the other nominee in a minute. Let's not keep people on hold. I'm guessing, is that you, Flavio?
That's me. How are you?
I'm well. How about yourself?
A little better. We had rain again all day today in La Crosse. What the hell? It's
not. I mean, you're not in the desert or anything, are you?
No, but this is too much. You know? I think I mentioned this anecdote before, that Mark Twain in the mid-1800s was in La Crosse for a week, and it had rained the entire week. And he wrote, "It had rained more than was necessary."
Yes.
Well, that's kind of how I feel right now. It rained all bloody day.
Well, that's the way. So that means we're gonna get it later this week, you know, because you just get it early, we get it a little bit later. I was so relieved this weekend to have 2 days of beautiful weather, and in fact, a third day today, but it was Monday, so work to be done. We'd had two just sloppy, sodden weeks, and like I said, I suggested renaming the month Sloptember.
No, I love that. That was perfect. By the way, we're engaging in a truly American pastime.
Namely, in two
words. Talking about the weather.
Oh, right? Indeed. Yeah.
That you can't get more American than that. I mean, that's how people chew the cud, right?
Well, and I thought you were going to say we're engaged in a truly American pastime, you know, trying to figure out which brand of beer the rapist drank.
No. I did want to contribute something toward that end. In college, I really became enamored of Hubert Bock, which is made by the Joseph Huber Company out of, I think, Monroe, Wisconsin?
Do they still exist?
I don't know. Joseph Huber.
There was some significant brewing going on in La Crosse, right?
Right, but I mean, I'm talking about college in graduate school. When I went to graduate school in Madison, I got really into Hubert Bock because it was a Bock. A Bock is a really dark and frothy and thick beer.
Oh, I know from Bock.
I just want to make sure, you know, everybody is on the same page. I never assume anything.
That's a good logical practice.
I assume people knew who Tommy Douglas was when I posted something about, you know, a meme about Tommy Douglas on Facebook, and a few people didn't know. So, you know, they're the reason why Canada has universal health care and single payer. And they never heard of him. And I had never heard of him either until well, the movie Sicko by Michael Moore. But so I'm always careful. I don't assume anything, even things that should be trivial but aren't. And but no, yeah, lacrosse has had some Heilemann, G. Heilemann Brewing Company.
That's what it was, G. Heilemann of La Crosse,
G.
Wisconsin.
G. Heilemann Brewing Company, which then they bought the rights in Milwaukee, and it was bought by the whatever the brewing company is in Milwaukee. I'm trying to think of
G. Heilemann did Old Style.
Old Stale.
And G. Heilemann also did, and Texans.
Green Death, special export.
Yeah.
Special export light.
But Texans will be revolted at the idea, but by the time I was out of college, G. Heilemann was brewing Lone Star.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the worst beer possible.
Yes.
It gave you the runs. Not Huberbach. I'm talking about Green Death, Special Export, and Special Export Light.
Yeah, that stuff was horrible.
That stuff was basically turpentine in a can.
Well, I got one to compete with you on. Stoney's.
Oof. Oh my God! The other one that I can think of
that was so undrinkable that fraternity boys wouldn't drink it.
Oh my God! What about Grain Belt?
Never heard of that.
From Minnesota. That stuff was basically formaldehyde in a can, embalming fluid, basically.
You know, Lee in New York just brought up an interesting point, and all of this is tied up with rape culture. Lee says, just for the name, would rapists choose St. Pauli Girl? Do you remember the St. Pauli Girl posters?
Yes, I do. The buxom with the...
Softcore porn kind of posters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bavarian, you know, with the mugs and the...
The mugs, yeah.
Do you remember
the balcony, the mugs on the balcony.
Do you remember their advertising slogan?
Did you get that?
Yeah,
the
I did.
Mugs
I got
on the
that.
Balcony?
Yeah, yes, I did. I'm trying to let it go forever into the mists of time, Flavio.
Okay.
Before you get us all in trouble. But do you remember the ad slogan that went with St. Pauli Girl? You never forget your first girl.
Oh, boy.
Now, yeah, as I've remarked in the past, you know, that being a German beer, it's actually, it's not a Bavarian beer. It's made by the Beck's people. And mm-hmm. when I mentioned it when I was over there, they were like, what? The St. Pauli, what? That is a German beer? Well, back home it is. This is something.
Now, Beck's is made by?
I think Beck's is now owned.
InBev?
Maybe it's InBev, yeah.
But before?
They were a standalone.
In America? And Beck's was American?
No, German.
Okay, but Munich, right?
I don't think it's Munich.
No, okay. Yeah, I think Polliner is Munich.
Polliner is Munich. And, of course, back before I couldn't drink it anymore, my favorite beer became Goffel out of...
Hockershor is
no,
Munich.
No, Goffel. Goffel out of Köln.
Grolsch. That's Dutch.
No, not Grolsch. Kolsch. K-O-L-S-C-H. Kolsch.
Okay.
With an umlaut.
The reason why I called is I drank like a German because I live in a German city. And drinking laws were pretty much skirted in La Crosse since forever because, well, pretty much people in La Crosse are either German, Irish, or Scandinavian descent. And no matter the drinking age, people pretty much turned a blind eye to drinking, you know, underage drinking or anything like that since forever. And, but I don't remember ever raping anybody.
Neither does Brett Kavanaugh.
No, wait a second. Wait a second. I freely admit to having liked beer very much at a point in my life, and I did. But I had to cut it out because besides the deleterious health effects as far as my weight gain goes, I also got something called the gout, which I'd never heard of before.
And if you've never had it, you don't want it.
It was extremely, excruciatingly painful. And then on the advice of a doctor who, you know, I'm brutally honest. I always, you know, if I drank a lot. I really liked Huber Bach. But it was making me balloon, and it gave me the gout. And then the doctor said, well, you know, gout is caused by, you know, triglycerides, you know, high triglycerides and, you know. And
uric
you
acid
really should cut
or urea or something like that.
Uric acid, yeah. So you really should cut back. And the minute I decided, okay, and I'm that way. If I fall in love with something and I find that that's, you know, because I'm an obsessive compulsive kind of person. If I fall in love with something and I find that it's hurting me, I immediately zero in on it and cut it out. It's like, okay, what am I doing that's hurting me? You know? Like when I bought a pair of shoes that for some
blistered
reason,
your feet, yeah.
Yeah, I started getting plantar fasciitis and I couldn't figure it out. And I, or that time when I brought, you know, I bought that detergent that, you know, made my skin crawl. I went to the doctor and the doctor, you know, we bring. Well, I used to use this. And then I switched to this brand of detergent because it was cheaper. And oh shit, it's that it's the detergent.
Right.
That's
all of which can fall under the broad general rubric of doctor. It hurts when I do this. Yeah. Well, don't do that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, by the way, Bex, courtesy of Ron and Raleigh. Bex is brewed in Bremen by Brauerei
Bremen.
Beck. Yeah. Yeah.
Brauerei Bremen.
No,
yeah.
Brauerei Beck.
Brauerei Beck.
Mm-hmm.
In Bremen. But you know, you'll never in my past hear, but you will hear about me getting sloshed and my friends carrying me into a shower to revive me because I'd gotten too wild. But raping never occurred to me for some reason.
Could that be because you actually had a, I don't know, respect for women?
Yeah, it's like, my
there's
immediate
I mean,
family,
I
grew up with five women. My mom
I say that, and it might come off as flippant. I don't intend it that way. But that you know the cultural milieu that we're discussing in regard to Brett Kavanaugh is a cultural milieu of pack mentality.
Yeah, I never lived in that. I never belonged to a fraternity.
You were pretty happy, right? I mean, you had friends. I mean, you weren't this poor, friendless soul wandering around the campus. No.
No, but I didn't need that kind of affirmation. I mean, seriously, and in college, and in when I moved to Madison, in La Crosse and in Madison, I was amazed at how stupid fraternities were. I didn't even know what they were, actually. Except that they had Greek letters.
Well, the sad thing about fraternities is that they arise out of a liberal Enlightenment impulse. Almost all of them have at their roots classical study and debating societies.
I did not know that.
For instance, the one that I was a member of was founded in the same year as the wave of revolution burned across Europe. And the people who were exiles from that revolution are the people who founded the intense nascent democracies that would become Wisconsin and Minnesota, Iowa, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois. There's a reason that that the word polis appears both in Minnesota, Minneapolis,
mm-hmm.
and Indiana, Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the word for the democratic Greek city-state.
The polis.
So it's Indiana polis and Minnesota polis. And you only use that term if you're going to try to attempt democracy.
And yet they're the most anti-democratic things there is.
And so in the late 1840s, at places like Jefferson College in Canonsburg, PA, and Union College, and they were mostly private schools,
mm-hmm.
and you've got the sons of some privilege, and they're all white and they're all male. And they gather together and form these little cliques or bands, depending on how clubs, if you will, depending on how you want to look at these associations.
Mm-hmm.
But they begin with an academic urge, Flavio. I mean, now there's going to be beer drinking, there's going to be horsing around, that kind of thing. But this is all pre-Civil War.
Okay.
For instance, you know, the planter class in the South would send their sons north for a liberal arts education because the better educations were to be had there in most instances. I mean, there were a few exceptions. UNC at Chapel Hill, Ole Miss in Oxford, Mississippi, the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, Georgia at Athens, Tennessee on the banks but all of these things were very, very humble origins.
Okay.
And if you really wanted to educate your son, you sent him north. And so you've got the business class of the East and the growing Midwest the educational needs were met by these little and little private colleges sprung up often under the auspices of various and sundry in most instances. I mean, there were a lot of Catholic schools, but Protestant churches. Okay. Let's see, some that just come to mind. Knox College in Illinois, Wabash in Indiana, what is now Washington and Jefferson in Pennsylvania, Westminster in Missouri, Transylvania in Kentucky.
How did the fraternities become such anti-democratic institutions, anti-intellectual?
Well, you know what? This is a good topic. If you're really interested in it, this is a very good topic, and I think it deserves some examination.
Phi Beta Kappa is one that comes to mind.
Phi Beta Kappa is the first Greek letter society. It's founded at William and Mary, Harvard.
Harvard.
And then the second Phi Beta Kappa chapter was, I think, William and Mary. And that's an academic honorary. What happens, though, is that these social associations grow up, and they were almost always matters of some privilege, because A, you're in college. All right, we have to have the Civil War before the Congress can actually pass the Morrill Act, M-O-R-R-I-L-L. That establishes state colleges and universities with federal funds and land grants.
Land grant.
Right. They had tried to pass that before the Civil War, and the Southern members of the House and Senate said, oh, hell no, because they wanted higher education to remain a matter for the elite.
Of privilege.
Yeah. The time in which the fraternities blossom was somewhat of a resurgence of classical education and debates of reenactments of the debate over Catiline, for instance. And I know that reference is not lost on you.
I didn't know that.
And they're all studying the classic liberal arts curriculum. That is founded upon Latin and Greek.
See, yeah, my idea of fraternities is Animal House. You know, that's
right, and it's accurate as far as it goes. Although they're really fraternities are far better and worse than Animal House. The number of kids. Yeah, Animal House was just a bunch of party maniacs. Nobody got killed. Kids get killed in acts of horrific drinking binges and hazing every fucking year, and it's sickening.
As in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, as in State College, PA. As in Morgantown, West Virginia. It's all over the place. But there's even an anthropological reason for that.
No.
During the founding era of American fraternities, most of these were religious schools, and there was no booze, so they'd have to slip off campus or they'd go and hide down, hide down by the creek and drink hard cider.
Okay.
But they were intensely academic. The Civil War comes on, and that is just, and the fraternity system was flourishing by then. It had moved south, it had moved north, it had moved west. The first fraternity chapter west of the Mississippi was Beta Theta Pi at Westminster College. All of this may seem irrelevant, I hope it doesn't. History is always useful.
No, I'm listening.
History is always useful. The fraternity system rebounds and regroups after the Civil War. As the fraternity members themselves got old enough to take their places in society, son of a bitch, they started getting rich. And they they began pumping the money back into the fraternities.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of my fraternity, there were, for instance, in New York City prior to World War I and World War II, an actual club run by the home office that was open to members of the fraternity on their way to the war.
This is the name of the fraternity?
Phi Gamma Delta.
Phi Gamma Delta.
Fiji. We have some awful racist traditions. But it's not Fiji like, I mean, yeah, they adopted the idea of the Fiji Islands, and they're the ones with their faces painted purple, wearing coconut shell bras, marching down the middle of Main Street in the homecoming parade, although hopefully that's been ended by now.
Oh, wow.
Grass skirts, too. Like I said, racist as hell. But actually, the word Fiji comes from Phi, the Greek letter Phi, Phi, mm-hmm. Gamma, Phi Gamma Delta, Phi, and then G, Gamma is G, so Phi G for short.
Right.
Because they came up with they came up with arcane rules. My fraternity was founded by six guys who were all already Freemasons. And so their rituals reflect that, and they've got their secret handshakes and their high signs and their low signs and the things that they mutter that can only be muttered to another brother.
Is this really related at all to, like, Freemasonry?
Well, I imagine my fraternity was not the only one that had Freemasons in it. Because that same period, 1845, 1846, 1850, that's also the flowering, the reflowering of Freemasonry in the United States.
Okay. It's all fascinating that, stuff that I don't know.
Just weird little arcane things like my fraternity forbids. You know, for instance, it's nothing on a college campus to see somebody walking around with the Greek letter Sigma and the Greek letter Chi because they belong to Sigma Chi. My fraternity won't let you use your Greek letters on your shirt.
Mm.
Hence, Phi G or Phi Gam. But you never see Phi Gamma Delta on a shirt because it's limited in where it can be put, like over the lintel of the door of the house, that sort of thing, or on your gravestone. And there's an unofficial place you can put it that a lot of the guys still do. They get the Greek letters tattooed on their ankle. Not great big, just little tiny, just very simply done, just Phi Gamma Delta. Because heading off to war and having witnessed the horrors of the unidentified dead in the Civil War, I can't remember if it was the Spanish-American or the First World War. It was probably both. But before the advent of reliable identification of dead soldiers, they'd get their Greek letters on their ankle and their chapter letters so that it could be at least narrowed down. And maybe the fraternity could help identify them after they were slaughtered in some godforsaken European abattoir.
So it was like an early form of dog tagging.
Right, and it gets out of hand in the post-World War II era. I mean, if you can imagine a bunch of college boys running around singing songs and getting drunk and weepy, but it's in the post-war post-World War II era that it gets out of hand. And the hazing reaches epic proportions, and the money does too.
Wow!
And for a lot of small colleges, their Greek system essentially ran the college, because no sooner were you admitted to the college than you start trying to find yourself a fraternity home, because if you're not, you're just an outcast.
Wow. And, but I never felt like that because it's, even though lacrosse had a Greek system, I don't think that they had the power that they have on other campuses because of the radicals on our campus. And I belong to honor societies. The French Honor Society, the Spanish Honor Society, that we're basically linguistic. different fraternities. They were, you know, societies you joined because you were an aficionado of a language or something like that. But the fraternities always puzzled me. You know, the hazing, and I think I walked in on a hazing once, and I was perplexed. They had this brother in a corner, and he was supposed to stand there like an idiot for the entire night. I went to a party, I guess, at a fraternity once, because I was invited by somebody that belonged to that fraternity, but not that I, you know, stayed there for very long, because I thought it was passing strange. But yeah, they had this guy in the corner, and he was supposed to be immobile.
Were they screaming at him, beating him, you know?
No. He was just supposed to be there, and just almost as though he'd been sent to the corner, as we were when we were kids.
Well, right, and see, Kavanaugh goes to Yale, and a lot of the Ivies and the prestigious up east colleges got rid of their fraternities because they got out of hand. But Yale still had them when Kavanaugh went there, and he pledged Deke. Unless I'm mistaken,
they were banned, weren't they? Wasn't his banned?
George W. Bush was also a Deke.
Wasn't that fraternity eventually banned?
Might have been. I'm not sure, but they, you know, that was a hazing ritual to have them run around and steal lingerie, and then march around with it as if it were a flag or the standard of a Roman legion.
Like Animal House,
and chant stupid chants. It's all terribly juvenile, and you know the sad thing is, they probably have no real place in American academics anymore. But the saddest part of the whole thing is it's kind of like the impulses that led to the founding of the Republic. The impulses were good. The impulses might even have been noble. And they were perverted and corrupted along the way.
Like everything, eh?
Well, what's the second law of thermodynamics say? That everything proceeds toward
entropy?
Entropy, yeah.
Randomness, chaos.
Bullshit nothingness.
Bullshit. But no, I liked beer, but you know, nowadays I only have 102, and I'm sure as hell not going to get more than a six pack.
Well, I'm pretty much at a place where I have none or none. I mean, I love different beer styles. I love the different tastes, the different flavor profiles. The best thing that ever happened was the breakdown of the death grip that the big brewers had, and the resurgence of craft brewing and home brew. You know,
microbrews.
Yeah, home brewing preceded micro brewing preceded craft brewing. But by the way, I did get a note. I got a note from Herman, who told me that Beck's and St. Pauli Girl are both owned by Yes Anheuser-Busch InBev.
No. Yeah, talk about. Yeah, standardization.
And by the way, we've had some other beer comments, Flavio. Asa said, back in the 3.2% beer days, we would run to Point Marion, PA, or Mount Morris, PA. Oh, my God. I know that road. To stock up for the weekend, beers like Rolling Rock and Mickey's Big Mouth were pretty smooth. Genesee, a darker persuasion, was acceptable.
I like Mickey's.
Genesee 12-horse ale, by God. However, if you purchased malt liquors like Schlitz or Big Cat, Katie bar the door, I still shudder thinking about it. Big Cat. God, I don't... Big Cat? I missed that one. And I think maybe I'm glad I did. Reg in Arkansas says, speaking of beers, the meanest one I ever tried was Camo Malt Liquor while working near Bend, Oregon in 2005. Two tall boys got me nearly stumbling drunk.
Oh.
I've never heard of that, and I think I'm glad of it.
I think I had a sip of it once, and it was nasty. You know how those nasty beers have like a metallic sheen to them?
And well, some of them have a metallic taste, and
and a taste, yeah.
Can.
And I no, and Colt 45. I think I had a sip of that once tonight.
Well, it still exists. No. I saw it in the cooler just the other day, when I stopped at the Rippy Mart. In fact, Elbert was pointing out, before they became the Astros, the Houston baseball team was named the Houston Colt 45s, named after the Colt 45 malt liquor. No, I don't think so. They were named after the Colt 45 handgun, the gun that won the West.
Do you remember when those Jesuit priests went on a protest, because of the marketing of the Colt 45 to the black community?
No, I don't. I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, they did in Chicago. I think there was some priests in Chicago that, I'll have to look that up, but I remember reading a report about that because abuse was particularly rampant in the black community in Chicago, Colt 45, and it was because of marketing.
Right, the way that Joe Camel was marketed to kids.
Exactly. And so these Jesuits, protested and wrote against that. And that was...
Well, yeah, and I hate aspects of that. I noticed I was watching a couple of episodes of Comedians in Car Getting Coffee, the Jerry Seinfeld thing. You know, it's easy because it's usually somebody interesting, and it lasts about 10 minutes, and you're done.
Right.
And lo and behold, I noticed product placement for a coffee company in the middle of it. There's no brought to you by, or it's just in the little cutaways that they do showing coffee being poured, it's a particularly branded name of coffee.
Is that even subliminal? Can that even be called subliminal?
No, I mean, it's right there in your face. It's not like... but that, how did we, of all the serious topics, how did we get there? Flavio, it's been a lovely conversation. I really have enjoyed it.
It's been awesome. And,
I always enjoy our little esoteric wanders.
Now, can I ask one last question?
Yes.
Okay. My understanding is that you did like Where to Invade Next, Michael Moore's penultimate movie.
Yeah, and
Are you going to watch this one?
When it becomes available for viewing on some platform online, yes.
Okay. No, I was just wondering because if you've seen it yet and.
Oh, I know. He comes to West Virginia. I'm just very skeptical of anybody coming here and documentarying.
Well, what's interesting is that there's nothing in the documentary that you don't already know. It's how he pieces it together that's interesting. And I'll leave it at that.
And that, that's the very definition of art. We all know what the color red looks like. We all know what the color yellow looks like. We all know what blue looks like. It's when you put them together in interesting combinations that you get art.
And so that's why I can't wait to hear your take on that and your criticism.
Well, you may have to wait a while, though, because there's no way it's going to... I'm pretty sure it's not playing in Beckley. And at this point in time, I'm going to have to wait until it makes it to Netflix or Amazon Prime
Netflix
or something like that. Yeah.
Okay. But you did see Where to Invade Next.
Yeah.
And you liked it.
I liked Fahrenheit
9/11.
Yeah. I liked Roger and Me.
No, Roger and Me is awesome. And Bowling for Columbine.
That may very well be the most powerful thing you did.
I think so too. I'll have to agree. That one really was the strongest. I don't think this one was weak, but yeah, Bowling for Columbine has to be the best so far.
In some ways, I think Michael Moore is still trying to work off having backed Nader in 2000.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of an albatross around his neck.
Yeah. Oh, he has more than one albatross on his neck, but we won't get into that. The hour is almost over.
Yep, it is. It is. Flavio, have yourself a good evening. You sound to be in better form, and I'm glad of it.
Oh yeah, no, I had an upper respiratory something that I kicked, so it's the time of year for it.
Indeed.
It's not your sinuses; it's your bronchi. It's something.
And, my daughter got her flu shot today, and I was like, yeah, let's get that over with now.
Yeah.
I hope the flu shot is better formulated this year, but it's, you know, every year they just kind of have to guess at it. They have to guess at which one will be the prevalent strain.
Yeah, and if you don't piss at Chinese, so they'll share their stuff with you.
Well, there we go.
You know that happened too, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, you have yourself a good evening.
All right, you take care, Flavio. It was a pleasant conversation. I enjoyed it.
Me too.
Take
Always.
Care. All right, bye now.
Bye.
I love those little historical wanders. Because, you know, we never get to where we find ourselves by accident, and we aren't just transported into the moment. We are, if you look, you know, hindsight being 2020, we are the product of reasonable and foreseeable, we are the product of the consequences of reasonable and foreseeable, no. We are the reasonable and foreseeable consequences of definable actions. There, that's what I was getting. Tralfamadorians, for instance, you know, Vonnegut's race of aliens who see time itself as another dimension, or perceive it. Tralfamadorians would have no problem whatsoever looking at the United States of America and saying, well, of course you get Trump. How do you not? There's no timeline where you don't get Trump the way you've behaved. Trump is not an aberration. Trump is a data point on a natural progression. And by the way, just as we wrap up this evening, again, thanks for meeting Shirley's Memorial Challenge. That's a big help to begin the month. But as we wrap up the evening, just a couple of minutes. I'm not going to fool with the audio or anything. But my other Morian nominee this evening was Kellyanne Conway. And before somebody starts hating on me for saying that, she made a big splash yesterday that grabbed a whole lot of media attention when she said that she too, and she did it quite dramatically, she before she said, I was a victim of sexual assault. That's not what makes her a Moran Monday nominee. It's what came after. She went on and said, that yeah, I'm a victim of sexual assault. But Brett Kavanaugh's not responsible for that. Oh, really? But then she doubled down and tripled down and quadrupled down. And what makes her a Maureen Monday nominee is I don't expect Judge Kavanaugh or Jake Tapper or Jeff Flake or anybody to be held responsible for that. Here's the whole quote. I'm a victim of sexual assault. I don't expect Judge Kavanaugh or Jake Tapper or Jeff Flake or anybody to be held responsible for that. You have to be responsible for your own conduct. So in the very same instant that she identified herself as a victim of sexual assault, she somehow managed, you know, because she's a maggot, to throw all the other victims of sexual assault right under the goddamn bus. I'm a victim of sexual assault. I don't expect Judge Kavanaugh or Jake Tapper or Jeff Flake or anybody to be held responsible for that. You have to be responsible for your own conduct. So I guess she's saying that she's responsible for the rape that was perpetrated upon her. And that is sickening. If there's anybody in the world who is not responsible for rape, it is the person being raped. Then she tried to back away a little bit. She said, women who are sexual abuse victims should go and blame the perpetrator. Well, the people who are standing and saying, I believe Dr. Ford, are not saying that they believe Dr. Ford because they just need somebody to blame for the fact that they were raped. That is a vicious simplification. And Kellyanne Conway is a vicious human being. I wonder what, I'm sorry, but I wonder which Republican raped her. Hell, I wonder if Trump did it. I wonder if it's a fresh occurrence. We have, by the way, in case you, yes, we have a president of the United States of America who, by his own admission, just a reminder, is capable of rape. But to use one's own experience of a horror like that as a means of trying to cast or divert attention away from another victim of rape. While one's heart and one's being, one's essence is moved by such an acknowledgement, goddamn, to then turn around and say everybody has to be personally responsible for their own rapes? That's sickening. That's disgusting. That's revolting. And then to say, go blame the perpetrator? Well, Dr. Ford did. And Kellyanne Conway does not believe Dr. Ford. So I would think that would... Jesus Christ. So there we are at the end of the program, a little bit over time. I apologize, but thank you all. Thanks again to all of our subscribers. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to Steve and Charlene, and Larry in Liberalville, and Alex for meeting Shirley's Memorial Challenge, brought to you by Laborman and Ralphs, and an anonymous contributor. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this ongoing conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, It's all for you. Later, y'all.